Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, everybody. This is Renee at Heart to Heart. Thanks for tuning in. I did some research today, and I have some things I'd like to share with everybody. As you know, we've done an awful lot of talking about bullying and the fact that bullies are everywhere and come in all different sizes and shapes. So today, while I was researching some of these interesting facts, I got into workplace bullying. I think if you're over the age of 30, you've probably at one time or another been bullied at work. And it always consists of almost gang mentality if it gets really bad. In other words, if you are the bottom guy on the totem pole, and everybody decides to start finding fault in you, everybody jumps on that bandwagon. And pretty soon, you're the only one that can't do anything right. You're the only one that everybody blames everything on. It's like you become the garbage can. Anything that nobody else wants to deal with comes to you, gets dumped on you, and the minute you don't take care of it, then, of course, you're ostracized because you're not doing your job. It can be very, very cruel. And I was, I guess, not surprised, but I was, I don't know what emotion I had today when I realized how many people are actually sick, get sick from the bullying that takes place in the workplace. Most of it came from Wikipedia, but I won't say the organizations that did the research, although everything that I'm going to read kind of follows suit. It says workplace bullying is most often a combination of tactics in which numerous types of hostile communication and behavior are used. Now, that's a really, really broad summation. Repeated health-harming mistreatment, verbal abuse, or conduct which is threatening, humiliating, intimidating, or sabotage that interferes with work or some combination of the three. They even go on to say that social ostracism is conducted, just like what I just said. You end up being the garbage can, and everyone loses respect for you, and everybody seems to follow suit. It's almost like, well, if three people say she's not worth anything, she can't be worth anything. It's a shame that when we become adults, we are still so pliable to be able to believe something like that about somebody that you're working beside. Genders in the workplace states that women appear to be at greater risk of becoming a bullying target, as 57% of those who reported being targeted for abuse were women. Men are more likely to participate in aggressive bullying behavior. However, when the bully is a woman, her target is more likely to be a woman as well. That's an interesting fact. Doesn't surprise me a lot, but it is an interesting fact. There's lots of percentages and things like that that I don't really want to go into, but I do want to share some of these facts with everybody. One of the biggest bullying tactics is to be falsely accused of errors that were usually made by someone else, often the bully. That's up to like 71% of part of the harm that's done to people in the workplace. They also break down different places where bullying is a major factor. Academia, blue-collar jobs, technology, medicine, but I got stuck on bullying in teaching, since this is very near and dear to all of our hearts, because we know that our children spend a good majority of their younger years in school. School teachers are commonly the subject of bullying, but they are also sometimes the originators of bullying within the school environment. Now, that's a sad fact. That kind of hurt my heart a little bit when I read that, even though I kind of already knew that because of things that I've already seen and read. But it's one of the statistics that are in this report. Now, this is amusing. Executives. Psychologists reported that they interviewed and gave personality tests to high-level British executives and compared their profiles with those of criminal psychiatric patients at a hospital in the UK. They found that 3 out of 11 personality disorders were actually more common in the executives than in the disturbed criminals. Those disorders were histrionic personality disorder, including superficial charm, insincerity, egocentricity, and manipulation. Narcissistic personality disorder, including grandiosity, self-focused lack of empathy for others, exploitiveness, and independence. Obsessive-compulsive personality disorder, including perfectionism, excessive devotion to work, rigidity, stubbornness, and dictatorial tendencies. Poob, these are some real tongue twisters. They describe these business people as successful psychopaths and the criminals as unsuccessful psychopaths. That's pretty scary. According to leading leadership academic, I won't read their names, it seems almost inevitable these days that there will be some personality disorders in a senior management team. Scary. Of course, not all bullies are psychopathic, though this may be of little concern to their victims. Bullies come in many psychological and physical sizes and shapes. In many cases, garden variety bullies have deep-seated psychological problems, including feelings of inferiority or inadequacy and difficulty in relating to others. Some may simply have learned at an early age that their size, their strength, or verbal talent was the only effective tool that they had for social behavior. Some of these individuals may be context-specific bullies, behaving badly at work, but more or less normally in their other context. But the psychopathic bully is what he or she is, a callous, vindictive, controlling individual with little or no empathy or concern for the rights and feelings of the victim, no matter what the context. Now, that's pretty scary, isn't it? That's really pretty scary. That sounds like not the bully in the sense that we think of the bully. That sounds like a really dangerous, dangerous person. Now, the health effects involved with this have been recorded as workplace bullying can harm the health of the targets of bullying. Organizations are beginning to take note of workplace bullying because of the costs the organization in terms of the health of their employees. Now, as most of us know, almost everybody today gets some form of health insurance. And it's a really smart organization that makes sure that their employees are healthy. And if this is going on in the workplace, you can bet that there's a lot of people there that aren't healthy. And I'm not even counting the bullies. I'm just talking about the people themselves that are being bullied. So I found all of this very interesting. It's a very, very large article, and it states some more information about what other countries do about bullying. I was kind of surprised to see how many places that I always thought were very, very social, very friendly places where they really struggle a lot with bullying in the workplace. And it's kind of disheartening to realize that no matter how old we get to be, that there's still somebody who wants to hurt us with words and actions. I don't understand it myself. It's beyond me. I make excuses for children when they bully. I make excuses for kids when they tattle on the other one when they're the one who did it. I make excuses for poor behavior because I'm making the assumption that they're still learning and that it's our job to make sure that they learn not to be that kind of a person. But it's really disheartening when you realize that in the workplace, and some of these places that I didn't even read to you are medical fields, doctors' offices, places where people come to receive help and care, and they should be in a place where the environment is warm and friendly and congenial. That is not happening. Evidently, that's not happening in a lot of places. So on this journey that I hope you're taking with me, we have to do what we can do to make every place safer. Not just the kids. It should start with the kids because they are our responsibility. But it has to be with all of us. We all have to start caring about how we treat each other. It doesn't mean that you have to love everybody that you connect with at work, at the mall, at a party. You don't have to. But you do have to be kind and you do have to be caring to some extent. Otherwise, eventually, what will we become? How safe will our world be? If you can't even be in a social function and know that everybody you're going to talk to is going to be kind to you, I don't think that's a lot to ask. I really don't think it's a lot to ask. And I do think it's a shame that we have to ask it. I think something has to be done on a much higher level than this little radio show or the conversing that I do with my friends and my family. I think that we all have to stand united. On the computer today, I saw so many things that just, you know, the young girl Bailey here in Northern Florida that I told everybody about, she's actually got petitions out there trying to have everybody sign them so that they don't stop her opportunity to start an organization that's a gay and straight alliance. My God, she thought to do that. Why aren't these people embracing this? Here's a young woman who's taken this on herself. She's 14 years old, and she's taken that first step to let everybody do what they should be doing on their own, and people are fighting her on it. That's unbelievable to me. Unbelievable. It's hard when nobody makes any steps forward. Then you feel like it's something that can never happen. But every time I look on the computer, I see somebody else who's trying to do something about the fact that we abuse animals, the fact that we are not kind to street people. We're not kind to each other. We're not kind to each other. And people hurt their own children. We have to stop and we have to start believing in ourselves and have enough love for ourselves that we want to love the people that we stand beside each and every day. I'm going to call in Shelley. She's my partner. So I'm going to call her in tonight so she can enter into this conversation. Hi, Shell.
Hey, Reen.
Thanks for calling.
I'm your partner, yes. In this radio show right now, right?
Yes, you are. Thank God you're calling in all the time. Otherwise, everybody would just have to hear me talk, and that must get pretty boring.
No, not at all. I mean, it's easy to listen to you because the things you say are on target. You have a very unique way of putting things, so I don't think anybody's having that reaction at all.
Thank you.
Because you and I are so like-minded on so many subjects. Let's put it this way: we're like-minded on everything that's important, It's easy for us to banter back and forth, and then you know, we can look at things from a slightly different vantage point, and hopefully that gives people additional things to think about. So it's I'm enjoying the process also.
Well, I hope so. And you know, today when I was thinking about what I have two or three people that I've got lined up to call and talk on the show, but everybody seems to be very busy, so I'm still working on that. But I thought to myself, a couple people have called me and asked me about workplace bullying, and of course I know it exists because it's happened to me.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that it's a big thing, and I do think it can make people ill. I didn't know that that was something that they were actually monitoring, but apparently that's true. The report I pulled today is 11 pages long.
Wow.
And it's very, very interesting. And there's people from all over the world who have done different kinds of testing. And I thought it was amusing that the psychopath analysis was kind of tied.
Yeah,
made
I know.
Me kind of laugh. I thought to myself, geez, I wonder which one I am. So, but I, you know. Go ahead, honey.
I mean, the whole thing is that when you, I mean, like I've seen some of these personalities myself. I've dealt with people, and the odd thing about it is that some of the people that I've dealt with at work that I would label as bullies, I've seen them outside of work, and they're very different. It's almost like the road rage thing, where certain type of behavior or certain types of situations, like you're driving in a car and you have this big, you know, powerful machine that's several thousand pounds in your control, and it does something to people. It's almost like they go into an aggressive mode, even sometimes people that aren't that way naturally. Then the minute they step out of the car, they're normal, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And they would
mm-hmm.
never have the same type of anger flare up in social settings than they do when they're driving a car. So there's something specific about road rage that people that engage in that do not engage in that same temper in other situations. The same thing on the job. I've met some of these people, and then you see them outside of the job, and their personality traits are completely different. They don't
mm-hmm.
exhibit any of that. Their family thinks they're wonderful. Their friends think they're wonderful, but something happens to them when they get on the job. Either they come from an old school thinking where if you do not keep your staff oppressed and afraid that they're going to get fired every minute, that they're not going to perform for you, or they just don't have the appropriate social skills to know how to train their staff. So when mistakes are made, instead of taking responsibility for not training their people properly, they put it on them. Or like you said, even sometimes it's their own mistake and they have to defer to somebody else. You know, they may have a personality where they can't accept blame for things and they have to put it off on somebody else. So there's a myriad of different personality traits that will show up in that. But very commonly, they don't transcend outside the workplace. And so they're very socially accepted, and a lot of people don't realize the type of coworker or boss that they are.
You know, that's a good analogy, and I know that that's true. I want to share a little story about that. When we were younger, my husband and I, one of his really, really good friends was at the house one night, and he was probably, I don't know, 10 or 15 years younger than we were. But he and Spike shot trap together and did things like that, and they were related. And he said, Spike was in the bathroom, and he and I are sitting at the kitchen table, and all the kids were there and everything. And he says to me, is Spike mean when he comes home? And I said, what? And he says, well, is he mean when he comes home? And I said, no. I said, why are you asking me that? And he said, well, because he's so easygoing when we're all out. He said, just like my dad, but when my dad comes home, he's mean. Nobody would believe he was the same person as he is out socially when he comes home.
Wow.
And knowing this man that he's talking about, you know, I was floored. I looked at him and I said, you're kidding me. Your father's like this like Pussycat, you know?
Right.
And he said, I know that's what everybody thinks about him, but that's not what he's like when he's get home, when he gets home. He said, so I wondered if Spike was like that. And I said, no, he's the same way no matter where he is. Sometimes that's good, sometimes that's not good.
Right.
But, you know, I had never forgotten that all these years, and that was many, many years ago, probably 40 years ago that he said that to me. And I've often thought about that because other people have said things like that to me about how people change in different scenarios, you know, when they're out with you, when they're home, when they're in a workplace. So I guess that's probably very, very true, that the analogy of somebody changing in accordance to what their surroundings are about is probably true of almost everybody.
Uh-huh.
But it seems like in the workplace, especially if you are someone who is a the boss, a manager, a department head, a supervisor, any of those leadership roles, the word leadership to me means that you set a good example. That's what leadership in my dictionary means. It means you're supposed to be thinking about, you know, other people following your lead.
Right.
And taking your behavior as to what they're supposed to behave like.
Right.
So if you are bullying someone when you're in a leadership role, you know what happens. That means that it trickles downhill, and that means the guy at the end of that ladder, he's got a hell of a day in front of him.
Right. Well, you know, Patton, who was one of probably the best military leaders our country ever had, a five-star general, and he has, there's, you know, all kinds of books written about him and everything in his leadership style. There's a lot of companies that will actually use some of his leadership style to train their upper management people, because number one, he used to lead the way you're talking about. First of all, he led by example.
Mm-hmm.
He also led by giving acknowledgement, giving recognition to his group. He would say complimentary words to them. He would praise them when they did good. And if he ever had to criticize a particular soldier or a particular officer, he would pull them in privately and admonish them. He would never do it where it would humiliate them. He would never do it where they would not be able to maintain their integrity and their pride once they were among the mix again. And that's something that a lot of managers don't have the maturity for, as far as I'm concerned, to just understand the sensitivity. If you're going to praise somebody, you praise them in front of everybody, and if you're going to criticize them, you do it privately. And this builds confidence. It builds people that want to, number one, that want to work for you, that want to do a good job for you, because respect goes both ways. It's just like I was talking about the other day with the gun, you know, kids can't, you know, they're not getting respect because they're sticking a gun in your face. It's the same thing with bosses. If they're going to make you feel like you're going to lose your job, you're not getting respect from them. Again, you're just instilling fear, frustration.
Yes, you're bullying them. Yep.
You're bullying them, right? But if you act with integrity, if you put out a helping hand, if you're approachable, being approachable is key. You have to be approachable to your staff, all right? And if you lead by example, and then they're very, very simple concepts, but when they're used, they're extremely powerful, and you will get a staff under you that will be very loyal and that will be very dedicated to you.
Well, and the other thing is that I've always thought was very important, and that is to, on occasion, it's not something you have to do every day, but on occasion, you need to stand or walk or sit in your associate's shoes or seat every now and then, just to see, you know, how the rest of the world treats them. And
right.
It gives you an insight that can be invaluable to you if you are a good leader. Then you have an idea what their struggles are in the course of a day. In the hospitality industry, which, as you know, I did for many, many years, it was imperative for me. I mean, it was nothing for me to be the chef. It was nothing for me to be the waitress. It was nothing for me to do the laundry, clean a room. Besides dealing with the guests on a regular basis, I would also do those things. So I'd have an idea because I'd say something to somebody and they'd give me this look like, I can't do that. And I'd say, why? And they, you know, Renee, you don't get it. I can't do it. So I'd go do it. And if I could do it, I'd say, yes, you can do it. If I couldn't do it, I'd say, you know what, you're right. We can't do it that way. Thank you for letting
right.
me know that that can't be done that way.
Exactly.
And it's not always easy to be, sometimes when you're so far up on the totem pole, you're really removed from everything. But you should know enough about your workplace so that if you are the leader, if you walk around, you should be able to sense the discord, feel the unhappiness, and know that something's going on, like bullying or abuse to any of the people that work with you, under you, around you. So on that premise, I think that we need to think about how that is working for people. A young woman who called me a few days ago, she just took a new job, and she's really being abused. She's working in one of those phone rooms, and they get talked to like they're, you know, like they're, I don't know, second-class citizens, if there is such a thing. And
right.
But she needs her job. And she says she gets home at night and she feels sick to her stomach. And I said, well, it's making you sick. I said, you're going to have to get out of there. Yeah, you're going to just have to get out of there. I realize that you need a job. But if you get real sick, you're not going to be able to work anyway. And that will make you sick when somebody constantly abuses you like that and talks down to you like that. That's not good for anyone.
No, of course not, and it opens up a whole litany of different health issues, and a lot of companies don't realize, you know, like you were saying, you know, they want their staff to be healthy because a lot of companies even will pay up to 50% or sometimes even more of the health insurance premium, so it's up to them to have a healthier staff because then their premiums go down, and these are the type of things that can create a sick staff. The stress alone, the not wanting, you know, that feeling of being trapped because you don't want to get up another day and drive into that job, but you have to pay your bills. And that feeling of being stuck and not having a choice and being trapped can create all kinds of havoc on the physical and emotional health.
Well, that's for sure. And the other thing, of course, that's involved with that is a smart business owner realizes that today, with the insurances and the the insurance for your employees and workers' compensation. If somebody is sick and has something going on with them, in many cases you have to keep paying those people. You can't just say goodbye to somebody because they're not well. So it really, you get a break in your insurance if you're drug-free, if you keep an eye on what people are doing, if you're really taking care of your staff, your insurance is cheaper. So, you know, it behooves the management team to make sure that things are being run so that it's, you know, it's a copacetic workplace.
That's right. And,
so
and
I don't.
There are so many wonderful courses out there for management level people. In case there are any management level people listening to this program, Dale Carnegie has a whole host of different courses that are geared towards leaders, that are geared towards people in that role. That very first book, you know, what is it, How to Win Friends and Influence People. Now, that sounds like an odd name, but when you read that book, it's all about how to interact with people in a positive way to basically inspire them to do what we need them to do. It is a business-level book. It's also for personal success. It can be used by an employee or an employer. Stephen Covey mm-hmm. wrote a phenomenal book called The 7 Habits of Highly Effective People. Again, all these books are about people so that they're in positive, productive, and effective relationship on both sides. And you can actually mm-hmm. help people by your positive actions to actually start acting more productive for themselves. What I was talking about the other night, about you can't change other people, but you can influence them by your example. You can influence them positively by your positive example. So
there's
so many of these courses and books out there. Dale Carnegie probably has one of the largest collections of them. But people that are in those type of positions or to get into those positions really should grab a couple of these books and read them so that they have a solid mindset of how to approach these types of books.
Well, I think the next thing that needs to be addressed, of course, is for us to give some viable solutions to people that could be out there who may be listening tonight or who may listen to the show tomorrow and are in a position like this. I would like to say there's a couple things that I would suggest that you do always, and that is if you're working in a place with a lot of other people, a lot of stuff going on every day, obviously if you are working in a restaurant and you're a waitress or a cook or something, you probably can't do this. But if you are in a position, a desk job or something like a desk job where you can keep a log, you should always record everything that takes place that you feel could make you or break you.
Right, right.
And when you do that, if you have an immediate supervisor, and if you've mentioned to the immediate supervisor that something is going on, and that immediate supervisor is trying to help but doesn't really know what to do, and maybe he or she has taken a few steps but it hasn't done any good, when you record these episodes or these happenings, then they should see that piece of paper or that log or that journal that you are keeping, and they should initial it. And
mm-hmm.
for future reference, if anything ever happens to the point where, say, you get bullied right out, and you have to find another job and you're not well and you don't feel, you know, like you're going to be an asset to another company until you get past this, there are places for you to go. You know, you
right.
can, between the employment office and insurances and things like that, but it won't do you any good unless you've kept a journal of sorts, something that shows that you've written and recorded everything that you've done, as I said, that would make you or break you, because it's surprising how many wonderful things you can do in a week and forget all about them. So
right.
it's nice to record those things as well. So then if you do decide to move on to another job, say nothing happens. Say you just, it's just not, you know, it's just not working for you and you leave. If you've kept a journal like that and you're writing your resume, you'd be surprised how many things you do in a conscientious state at work that you forget that you did, that other people
right.
would be very impressed by.
Right,
so
right, exactly.
That is, I would suggest for everyone to keep a work journal. And if you are struggling with private stuff, you should keep a private journal as well, because there's nothing quite as therapeutic as writing everything down and looking at it in black and white. And I think I've mentioned this before, even on this show, writing letters and writing down when your heart hurts is very therapeutic, very, very therapeutic. So if you are going through something like that and you feel like you really don't have anybody to talk to, and maybe you even feel like nobody's going to understand what you're talking about, if you write it down and read it to yourself, that in itself will help you.
Right.
But as far as the workplace is concerned, if you've got something written down and you go to another job or anything happens to you when you leave the place that you're at, if you think that you're being abused, you should be recording it. It's just a safety precaution.
Right. When you say recording it, you make sure that you're making people understand. You're talking about writing things down, because you can't record somebody with knowledge.
No. Yeah. No. Sure. When I say recording, I just mean keeping a record of it.
Right.
So get yourself one of those little composition books or anything like that.
Right.
And do that. What else it helps, because I did it for a long time in my last position. And recently I've looked through some of my books and remembered things. Oh my gosh, I forgot all about that even happening.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's good for you, and it will help you if something like that happens somewhere down the line.
The other thing that you can consider at work, and there is a caveat with this, so it's a two-sided recommendation. If you work in a larger company that actually has an HR department, sometimes it can be very helpful to speak to somebody in the HR department, but the caveat there is that you need to know them first, because not all HR people are trained properly. At one of the jobs I had recently, a large manufacturing plant up north, the HR department was actually part of my problem. That's
mm-hmm.
where some of the abuse was coming from. The gentleman there was getting ready to retire, and he just did not handle the job well at all. He was very antagonistic. He didn't want to ever hear anything. So it was not somebody that I could go to. Now, I sized that up by having other conversations with the individual, so I realized I couldn't go to him for assistance because I saw his reaction with minor issues, and I said, okay, well, this isn't somebody I can go to, and then the situation went from bad to worse, and I ended up leaving there, as you know.
Mm-hmm.
But on other jobs I've had, the HR people, the HR person was the solution, was the person that I was able to sit down with, calmed me down, was able to, you know, assure me that everything was okay or make things okay, and basically act as an interventionist between me and the person I was having an issue with. So you really have to assess that where you're working. If, in fact, you're working at a company where there is an HR department, they can sometimes be the solution, but they can also sometimes be the problem. So you have to assess the people that are working there before you attempt to go for help. And then
mm-hmm.
that can be as simple as just having a simple conversation. The other thing is that if you do choose to go to an HR person or to an upper management or, you know, to somebody for assistance with some situation you're having with a coworker or with a superior, you also have to make sure that you maintain yourself very professional. And sometimes bullying can be a very emotional thing, and you can feel very emotional. But the more controlled you are with how you explain what's happening, the calmer you present yourself, the more credibility you have. And that's one of the cautions, because sometimes when people are going through that, they get overly emotional and they lose credibility when they start explaining it, because they don't explain it in a way that it's received properly. So sometimes
mm-hmm.
it might help, going back to the journal you were talking about,
mm-hmm.
help to write something down and say, look, I'm a little nervous about this. I wrote it down because I don't want to forget anything. so I'm going to read from my paper. And that would be received perfectly fine, you
mm-hmm.
know.
Mm-hmm.
And then this week, kind of write your thoughts down, read them, let them sit for 24 hours, go back. If it's coming out the way you want it to come out, then go ahead and read it. Otherwise, make your adjustments, sit with another 24 hours, and then attempt to go into who you've chosen to speak to. So that's some other advice also.
Mm-hmm. Well, and all that's good information, and that will absolutely give you some breathing space. You know, I think one of the most difficult things with when you're going through a stressful situation is that you can't find the door.
Right.
And if you realize that some of these things can be, you know, can be your door, can be your options, so that you make good decisions and so that you feel like you're not trapped.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of times things get better just by knowing that you're not trapped, just
right.
by knowing that you have some options to you.
Right.
So
right.
If you are in a position like that, like I said, first of all, you're not alone. My gosh, I've talked to so many people just recently who have told me stories about their workplace, and I'm like, oh my gosh, how did you even, you know, how did you stand that? And they're like, I don't know. I needed my job, and
right.
You know, it's really hard on them. But you do have. It is nice that a lot of places now have got good human resource departments and people that understand now what human resource means. And it's quite a position to hold in a big company. It's a lot of responsibility, and you have to know all the laws and everything. So if you are in a big company and you have a good human resource department, again, don't go in empty-handed. Start keeping
right.
the journal today. If you're worried about what's going to happen in the future, start keeping the journal today, because you're helping everybody by doing it that way. You know, it's not like you're out to get somebody. A lot of people say, oh, I could never do that because I love my boss and I love this. And I'm not saying it so that you can
right.
set somebody up for demise. I'm saying
right.
it so that you protect yourself, and you'll actually become better at what you do. Because at mm-hmm. the end of the day, who's going to assess what you did all day?
Right.
You are. You're going to mm-hmm. look and you're going to say, I wonder why I didn't do this. I usually do this, and I didn't do this day. And it's going to make you a better employee, first of all, and maybe the whole problem will just go away, because maybe
right.
there is a problem with your performance. I don't know. But if there is, the one that should know about it more than anybody should be you. And if you don't have the kind of boss that comes in and says to you, look, Shelley, I really like you. You're here every day. You do this, but this really isn't the position for you. You know, that would be the ideal situation, but maybe you don't have one of those kind of bosses.
Right.
You know?
Right. The other thing to keep in mind is that, again, if you are going to approach someone for assistance, whether it be a superior or HR, try to really honestly look at your situation, like you just said.
Mm-hmm.
See if, you know, like maybe the bully is attacking you, but maybe there's some element there that's giving this person fuel to attack you. Make sure
mm-hmm.
that you're not doing anything that plays into what the bully is citing you for.
Mm-hmm.
And so realistically look at your situation, and at the same time, try to come up with a solution. If you go to someone in HR or you go to a superior and you say, look, I respect so-and-so, however, so-and-so doesn't treat me with respect. I'm working very diligently. I've accomplished blah, 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 blah. You know, I'm getting this work done. They're making it very difficult for me to work here. But, however, I would like to see things work out. You know, so speak as positively as you can.
Mm-hmm.
You can speak about the person, but don't, like, run them into the ground, and try to come up with a solution. Say, maybe if we could do this, or maybe if we could have a meeting together, you know, or maybe, you know, something like this, or maybe I could show him some of my accomplishments or her some of my accomplishments or something like that. Come up with some sort of a solution to show them that you're trying to figure out a fix for this yourself. And that goes a long way. When you're when an HR person sees that, or a superior sees that, that you're ready, willing, and able to fix this, that you're not asking them to remove this person or to remove you and stick you in another department, you know, or maybe the solution is to stick you in another department. Say, look, you know, this person's been here for 20 years. I don't think they're ever going to change. I have all this to offer the company. Is there another position here? Or what would you suggest for me to be able to work better with this individual? And if you go in with that kind of a responsible attitude, where it looks like you're willing to work this out, you'd be surprised how many times it will work out in your favor.
Well, there's nothing, I'll speak from my own experience, there's nothing that a leader wants more than somebody that comes in with a problem that's accompanied with a solution.
Right.
Not ever. I mean, to have somebody come in and say, this, this, and this is wrong, but I've been thinking about it, and maybe this would work, and maybe that would work. That's a great suggestion, and that's a wonderful idea for anybody to do. Because I think that that's really the name of the game at the end of the day. You don't really want to lose your job. You don't really want to have to start over someplace else. Who wants to do that? But if you do think it through, and if you are keeping the journal, this will be one of the things that is benefited as well. Like I said, analyzation of your own performance. You'll be able to see and judge yourself whether or not you really are the superstar you want to be, or if you're being a whiny, you know, malcontent. Maybe you are, you know.
Right.
I mean, I have
right.
been one before, as much as I hate to say that out loud. I know I have been one before. So if you are, then maybe the journal will help you see that, and you'll wake up and smell the roses yourself. But to be able to walk into a human resource department and say, you know, things just aren't very good for me, and maybe this is why, but if we could do this, this, and this, that's the perfect scenario. And if you are being bullied by real higher-ups, and there is no place for you to go, really no place for you to go, you know, just start looking for another job. Don't wait for things to get better on themselves, because they don't. Unless you see a way, like I said, to a door with your journal, to a human resource department, or to somebody who is your immediate superior, and say, this is what's happening to me, and you know that there's somebody in this company who will listen to you, then that's what you should be doing. But if there isn't, then, you know, don't beat yourself into the ground. Get to a place where you're happier. Life is too short. Life is too short to not be happy where you spend 40 to 50 hours a week every week.
That's right. And it's so unhealthy for people to feel trapped in their jobs. First of all, too many people take jobs that are not, that they don't enjoy. I mean, I think that's crazy. I have been extremely lucky that every job I've ever had, and I've worked at 11 different companies and actually 5 different industries, so I have quite a varied background, but I have to say I've enjoyed every job. I always enjoyed the work I was doing. I always enjoyed the people I was working with. I would move on either for advancement, or I would move on because I had an issue with somebody in upper management, you know, because I didn't like the way the company was being run. But I would always leave before it became just like unbearable for me. And I think there was only one time when I felt trapped, and that was because I didn't want to leave the company and things weren't going well for me, but job and leaving on my own anyway. But I stayed there probably longer, and you know what job I'm talking about. You know, I stayed there longer than I should have, because I enjoyed the work. What I find mind-boggling is these people that will work decades at a company and they don't even like what they're doing. That is so unhealthy. That's unhealthy emotionally. That's unhealthy physically. You have to find something. You should be passionate about what you do. You should want to get out of work in the morning and say, wow, I really want to get to work because I enjoy doing this. But if you don't have passion, at very least like it. You know, this is something you're doing for the majority of your week, you know, month mm-hmm. in and month out. Have it.
Mm-hmm. Some yeah, you you want it to be something that you get some joy from, absolutely, and it will make all the difference. You know, if you don't have that, then maybe, you know, then maybe you are in the wrong place. You know, but it should be up to you to assess that. You shouldn't be bullied out of it. You shouldn't be run out of it because somebody's jealous of you or whatever the scenario might be. This paperwork that I looked at today, I mean, I only read the parts that I thought would serve a large group of people, but there's many things in it that, like, floored me about how, you know, people would be completely ostracized in important places, you know, not just Denny's, you know, in real workplaces that really serve people, and it's important for the people to feel that warmth and camaraderie. It's disarming, really, to know that so much discord is going on and that it's actually recorded and people are looking into it to do something about it. But I do think, like I said, if there's anything, you know, that we can do to help you, you're welcome to call. You're welcome to call on the show. You're welcome to message me on Facebook, whatever you'd like to do. And sometimes it's just a matter of talking it through with somebody who doesn't have any vested interest in what you're talking about, too. And if that's the case, then, you know, you can call and talk. But I do think that if you're in a scenario like that, it isn't healthy. It's not good for you in the long run. If you really feel like it's a job you really, really love and you really, really want to stay there, then by all means fight for it, but do it the right way. Start keeping a journal. Pay attention to what you do every day. Record it on a piece of paper, not with a recorder, but record it on a piece of paper so that you know what you're doing every day, and somebody else will know what you're doing every day. And see what you can do to help yourself. But if you need somebody to talk to, like I said, that isn't involved and isn't there and, you know, won't know anybody that you're talking about, you can always call in the show and talk about it. I think it's healthy to talk through things like this, and I think there's a lot of it going on in the world today. So if you have some ideas and you know how to help somebody like that, we'd like to hear from you as well with that, because I think that there's a lot of people out there that suffer in silence. And the more we talk, the better things become. Let's don't ever forget that communication and being able to share what's going on with you is the most therapeutic thing you can ever do for yourself.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
And sometimes it's not all that easy. But, and if you can't do it with anybody and you can't talk about it, start writing it down in a journal.
Yeah, because whether you do anything with the journal or not, it's therapeutic.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
mm-hmm.
It's making you self-aware. And it can also raise your confidence or raise the bar with your performance, because if it does enlighten you to the fact that maybe there are some issues, it gives you the chance to make some adjustments in how you're performing. And if things are going exactly the way you had thought they were, then it should instill a little bit more self-confidence in you. You know, one of the main things is that when you are being bullied, a lot of times when people get bullied, they have some underlying insecurities to begin with. It was interesting. I had watched a show, a little off topic, but also sort of on topic with this. I was watching this talk show. This was years ago. I think it was like Maury Povich or one of those type of shows. And they were talking about violence, about people being mugged. And they said that muggers will actually size up a victim, that a person who can be easily mugged looks like a victim, the way they walk, the fact that when you look at them, they drop their eyes. You know, so people have these telltale signs when they can be victimized, okay? So when you have more confidence in your work, if you can instill a level of self-confidence in yourself, if you can feel good about what you do, if you can feel that self-assurance that, yes, I am doing a good job, this is what I'm doing what I'm supposed to be doing, and I'm doing it with quality, and I'm doing it effectively, all right, and you get this level of self-confidence, it almost puts off the bully to leave you alone or to not start with you to begin with. This is one of the areas of self-awareness that's really, really tough for people, because once they get into that victim mode, they almost embrace it, and they can actually bring more bullying on because of that. You don't want to go to the other extreme and then become aggressive with the bullier, because now you're playing into exactly the type of behavior that they may be trying to, you know, to bring out in you. One of the hardest things to do is to maintain your professionalism. And that's probably one of the key pieces of advice I could give to people tonight. Always maintain yourself professional. Always stay as calm as you can in any altercation. If you're really being, spoken to in a way that's inappropriate or threatened or anything like that, the calmer you stay, the higher credibility you will have if it does then escalate to higher ups or to other people that might get involved in what this bully is trying to do to you. But always maintain a level of self-confidence and self-assurance that what you're doing is right, and don't have a victim attitude. Don't go into work worried that you're going to get bullied again, because you can actually stimulate that to keep happening to you. At some point, you have to break the cycle by feeling different about your interactions with that individual and your interactions and job. And that's a very tough thing to do, but it's doable. And you'll notice that once you start changing your own attitude about a situation, many times the situation starts easing up on its own. It may not be an overnight change, but you'll see some minor improvements as your demeanor changes, because all of a sudden they don't see that victim attitude in you anymore. They don't see that victim expression, or they don't see you slumping your shoulders. You know, you put your shoulders back and you act a little bit more so. It kind of puts them off a little bit.
That's right.
So
that's right. But, you know, that's like I have a couple of friends who quote the Bible to me, and I believe in pride. And, of course, there's quotations, you know, like pride goeth before a fall, and too much pride makes you, you know, not worthy, and all this kind of stuff. And for me, pride, it means the word itself means that you're proud of yourself. It doesn't mean that you think you're the very best that ever walked on the earth, but it does mean that you are striving to be everything that you believe you should be, that you want to be, that people that love you want you to be. And that should be prideful for me.
Right.
I've always talked to people who have that look like what you're talking about, and they are. They're like, they're like a hot fudge sundae to a bully. You know, a bully sees them a mile away. So your pride, as long as you don't abuse it and get thinking that you're the only one, you're not. But you should be. There should be some pride in you about who you are, what you stand for, what you believe in, and what you do with your life.
Exactly.
Otherwise, what's the sense? I think pride is a good thing as long as you don't overdo it. So, but being proud of who you are is a big step and means a lot to how you carry yourself and how you behave with others, and your professionalism and the way you treat other people has a lot to do with how much pride you have in yourself.
Well, there's false pride that people abuse and make decisions that are, you know, like, well, that they won't do something that's positive, you know, because they don't want to be embarrassed. Now, that's false pride.
When you're talking
about taking pride in your work, every boss wants somebody that takes pride in their work. That's a good thing. That's a positive thing.
Yes.
Pride is absolutely a positive emotion if it's applied in the right way, if it's applied in a humble way. You can be humbly proud of yourself.
That's right. Yeah, so there's no reason, for, you know, to be a conceited self-touter. It's about,
right.
But it's still about, you know, I'm doing the best I can. Is there room for improvement? Always. But I'm giving it my best shot, and you should have pride in yourself if you're giving it your best shot. We're out of time, and I will talk to you, I'm sure, tomorrow night, Miss Shelley. I hope everyone enjoyed the show. And I hope this week that we get some people to call in and tell us about some of the things that they're offering for young people so that they can get help in various places. So I love you, and good night.
Good night, Green. Bye.